top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
For centuries, he has remained hidden, watching, waiting. You will be. And now, he is coming. He knows your secret hopes. He sees your private dreams, and he can grant your every desire.
Well, I'm not a greedy man. How about $1 million?
I remember a certain potentate whose last party was talked about for centuries.
Oh God, how I'd love to host a party like that.
I wish to be beautiful forever.
Even if it kills you.
As you wish.
Was it worth it? Would you like to escape?
Yeah.
No!
Beg for your life.
Help me!
Pray for your soul. But whatever you do...
Ready to play?
Don't make a wish. Wishmaster. Careful what you wish for.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's another edition of the Really Awful Movies podcast. This one today is going to be centered on the unique, quirky, phantasmagorical creature feature offering from the late 90s, Wishmaster. This is a suggestion by my podcast partner in crime, Jeff, who can't join us this week, but he'll be rejoining the program again very, very, very soon. This is a film about which there's something uniquely disarming. Even if it occupies like a fantastical horror milieu that we normally sort of avoid, unless it's on the Italian horror side of the ledger, or maybe something along the lines of Nightmare on Elm Street, because fantasy and horror is a pretty difficult, or two difficult spaces to try and bridge a divide, and it often doesn't turn out quite that well. I think another film you could throw in there, and we'll touch on it later, would be Hellraiser. And this one, though, is far from being as dark as those two efforts, and has more of a more fun feel, despite paradoxically being just chock-a-block full of just disgusting gore and blood. Speaking of Nightmare on Elm Street, there's a thread that connects both the Wishmaster franchises and entries and Nightmare on Elm Street, and that's of course the director of Wishmaster, Robert Kurtzman. Kurtzman did Fred Krueger's creature forms in what is arguably one of the best entries in the series. Well, it's got to be, and is probably arguably one of the best sequels of all time, A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. Hell, if you want to argue about it, we probably can. I mean, that's such a solid, indelible entry, and one of the few sequels that both can eclipse the original and also find its way into any true bona fide horror fans worth their salt entry into their top 10 or top 20, let's say, just to make it a little broader, depending on how you feel about that series. Kurtzman is a makeup man and prosthetic man, and he also had a hand, I guess you could say, a gloved, sharp hand in A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child. And Kurtzman's bona fides in horror were established, at least on the practical side of the of things, if not behind the camera itself as a director, for things like Phantasm 2, Evil Dead 2, whose impact is something you can see in the bloodletting in Wishmaster, is really, really apparent, the overlap between the aesthetic sensibilities of that iconic franchise as well as this one. He also cut his teeth on Dr. Giggles, the really fun Vietnam-based Bride of Reanimator, Halloween 5, Body Bags, admittedly only half of which I've seen, is obviously the John Carpenter anthology film, and he did like tons of other things. I think he did a lot in Predator as well, so it's no surprise that for his directorial approach, Robert Kurtzman decided to pack his movie and to really stuff it full of chock-a-block full of practical effects, practically speaking. It's something that makes Wishmaster under the radar in a way. I mean, it's sort of an over-the-top wackiness belies the fact that it has a lot of really sinister elements, and it's something the two of us on the Really Awful Movies podcast really appreciate. When you're able to merge these two worlds, it's pretty amazing. So, I mean, we love our practical effects, make no bones about it, whether it's something like an Italian gut muncher or obviously something in a similar, let's say, adjacent camp, which would be Wishmaster. Now, as a caveat, don't let the cheesy and really kind of underwhelming 12th century Persian courtier kind of setup dissuade you or fool you into thinking this is a different kind of movie. I mean, that one is easily, the mise-en-scene and the setup for that is easily the least compelling part of this flick. Just, you know, hold on to your dusty, wide-brimmed, sable fedora, Indiana Jones. Just hang in there. You will be rewarded with something that's a hell of a lot of fun down the line, so just trust us on that one. Now, in Wishmaster, there's a statue, a so-called Ahura Mazda, which it's like a heavy set stone statue, probably 1,000 years old, contains a red amulet or some sort of opal or emerald in its inside its head. Now talk about a MacGuffin. I mean, the term Hitchcock used to describe a plot device that drives everything. So not unlike the 1973 Bill Friedkin effort, The Exorcist, it's something that whets our supernatural appetite at the outset. So, of course, in The Exorcist, you have, a cursed statue being unearthed in the Iraqi desert, I believe it is. But the cursed object plot device is one that goes way back to, I guess, the nascent cinema history, too, because in literature you've got The Monkey's Paw, which is a supernatural short by W.W. Jacobs that was penned in 1902. It's also a bookstore down the street where I am in Toronto, a really weird, eccentric bookstore. It looks like it'd be something out of a Dario Argento film, but anyway. In The Monkey's Paw short fiction, three wishes are granted to the owner of the appendage, but the wishes come with an enormous price for interfering with fate. And that's pretty much on point with how Wishmaster deals with its MacGuffin and its amulet slash precious stone. In film history, I mean, along with the aforementioned The Exorcist, you can throw in Curse of the Stone Hand. And The Monkey's Paw is a conceit that The Simpsons played with in an episode, Treehouse of Horrors. I forget which one, one of the earlier ones. But more recently, there's also, I mean, the flies buzzing. You'll probably remember that iconic scene from the Moroccan Bazaar in Hellraiser, where you have a puzzle box being picked up by some a buyer in a Moroccan bazaar. And obviously, the lament configuration. And you know what happens with that one. And we could go on. I mean, there's probably just countless examples that you could draw upon for this kind of thing, predominantly in supernatural and frequently in Italian. So at the outset of Wishmaster, you have the Ahura Mazda stone sculpture being unloaded by shipping container and by ship. And it's a museum-bound item, of course. And while they're unloading it, the thing drops from the crane and lands on a poor dock worker's noggin. Damn, if only that were one of the Sopranos henchmen, and then you'd be killing two birds with one stone. But see, it's cursed, right? I mean, this is an object that's clearly cursed. The stone eventually gets appraised by a local woman, Alexandra, who inadvertently releases an evil djinn spell, killing her platonic friend who had romantic designs on her. So, and this releases an evil djinn character. And Jin is a pre-Islamic demon, and they're a continued source of fright for many a horror film lensed in that part of the world. But I guess you could say maybe the Arab world specifically, as Islam is obviously ubiquitous and the second most popular religion, if I'm not mistaken, and is basically everywhere. When the movie Baskin came out, I asked a couple of Turkish followers on Instagram how that was received in Turkey, because it's a very different kind of supernatural movie, and I was told that gin-based movies, I almost want to say gin-based drink, like a martini or something, but gin-based movies over there are ones that are really, really popular. And again, it speaks to the fact that there's something for everyone in the horror space. And a gin is something difficult to wrap your heads around if you're on the Western side of things, and in this part of the world for sure. Instead of the wish-granting jovial imps that we've come to know these creatures as genies, you know, a genie in a bottle, like that, you know, awful Christina Aguilera song goes. Djinns are very, very evil, and they don't grant you like a new prefab suburban home or an all-inclusive resort getaway to Mexico or, you know, that Ferrari, whatever you've had your eye on. Their providence is evil. They do evil. They're not about, make a wish kind of stuff. And they're, you know, it's a pretty great creature around which to base your film. And to build on the Nightmare on Elm Street connection and draw a really obvious connective thread to that one, we have good old Bob Englund. You know, Robert Englund, he plays kind of a shady, I suppose maybe many of them are, a shady art dealer named Beaumont, a sort of intermediary that lets our hero, the gemologist Alexandra, interface with a local folklore expert at the university. And you gotta love the folklore expert. It's such a wonderful element of the horror space. One of my favorites is in Dr. Butcher MD, where they describe the belief systems of the people of this made-up, I believe it's Macau or some sort of fictional island in the middle of nowhere that draws the principles of that film. And it's really hilarious. And what would a horror film be without some sort of anthropologist, self-styled expert sounding off? The professor is... We're introduced to her, and she's just a wonderful character. Is you know, speaking of gin, quite a hard drinker, but she is overseeing some kind of Greek tragedy. Pardon me, like an in the round amphitheater, you know, ancient drama production. And she has a student who is the source of one of the film's many, many jump scares. And they come in with some sort of like Greek chorus outfit, and it actually, I somewhat jumped, so that's okay. Anyway, when you have jump scares, at least you're better off not having ones that involve felines, and you better counterbalance it with lots of gore, and of course there's lots of gore and viscera to splash around in Wishmaster, which is kind of surprising when you were to give a cursory read of the plot. You wouldn't think that. Now, back to the djinn. The djinn cuts quite a figure. I mean, you could describe it as maybe Skeletor by way of Hellboy. Maybe that makes sense. There's numerous other ways, but it's almost like a stone sculpture creature itself in a way. It's got these piercing, bloodshot, really amazing red peepers, and he grants wishes, but they're only in the negative, ambiguous kind. So he's hell-bent, I guess, so to speak, on destruction rather than granting positive wishes. In one really incredible scene, when he takes on a human form, the djinn is interrogating a security guard, a doorman, played by none other than Tony Todd, star of what is arguably, speaking of arguing again, the best 90s horror of all time, Screw You, Scream, Candyman. Now the djinn manages to get the Tony Todd doorman bouncer character to admit that he's living a dull existence and needs to escape. Aha, he grants him the wish. Hence, the doorman is placed immediately into a Chinese water torture water tank a la Harry Houdini. And if you're afraid of drowning, as well you should be, because drowning has got to be one of the most terrifying ways to go, then, you know, this is a scene that's really quite shocking and incredible as you watch the Tony Todd character struggle, imbibing a bunch of water. It's really unbelievable. The djinn also lays waste to another security guard played by Kane Hodder from Friday the 13th. Now, as we said, it's all up to a gemologist, Alexandra, who first, I think, comes in contact with the stone and who's a subject matter expert when it comes to these kinds of precious stones. And it's up to her really to match wits with the djinn. And that's the rest of the narrative thrust and where this film goes. Now, with a cast like this, it's probably a good time to segue into what I've learned in Wishmaster. Now, we lost him a couple years ago, but Phantasm Tallman, who played the, memorable antagonist in that film, Angus Scrimm, he's actually the narrator of Wishmaster. And you'll know the voice if you probably pay close attention. And if not, you probably don't know that you know it, and you won't know quite from where, but it'll reverberations will resonate. And speaking of Phantasm, Reggie Bannister appears too in a pharmacist role. And so we get a double bill of that iconic series. So lots of Phantasm folks. Ted Raimi, speaking of Evil Dead, it's fitting, as many of the effects are Evil Dead-like. He plays, a blink-and-you'll-miss-it role. And Joseph Pilato, who's Captain Rhodes in George Romero's epic post-apocalyptic masterpiece and part of the iconic trilogy Day of the Dead, so the Dead trilogy, he's in this. Another thing I've learned is that Wishmaster has perhaps one of the most sublime rock tracks or any music tracks ever to work as a horror film coda, and that's Listen to Your Heart, performed by Motorhead. It's weird because it's a Lemmy penned tune, at least I think it, well, it's Motorhead for sure. I don't know if Lemmy penned it, but it's very obviously in a major key, and it sort of struck me as something that would be atypical of Motorhead's work. It's definitely up there on the horror side of things with the Ramones' Pet Sematary song, which was penned to coincide with the release of the movie of the same name, the 1989 Stephen King inspired film. I believe in the latest Pet Sematary with John Lithgow, which is obviously very subpar, in which all they did was, spoiler alert, swap victims but keep everything else from the original film intact. They, I believe, used a cover version of Pet Sematary to very poor effect. I mean, it's, if you're going to go with that one, go with Joey and the Boys. I mean, you can't have some sort of faux post-punk garbage rendition like they did, but I mean, we could do an entire podcast on the limitations and drawbacks of that effort. And I always switch between whether it's that or it that was the most unnecessary or unoriginal or uninspired recent reboot. Obviously, Halloween 2018 takes the cake in that regard for just being uninspired rubbish. Another thing I learned is that this is a pretty smart flick, and belying its silliness. The dialogue is quite ripping too, especially when the antagonist is delivering it. Listen to their screams, a child. Listen to the music of their agony. And then you have this portentous, heavy narrator saying, once in a time before time, God breathed life into the universe, and the light gave birth to angels, and the earth gave birth to man, and the fire gave birth to the djinn, creatures condemned to dwell in the void between the worlds. And that is almost something that we could put in the bumper of our podcast. It's such a great speech. It's something that you could have heard in maybe Lamberto Bava's Demons or something. And there's also, we have unfinished business, to which the gemologist Alexandra says, it's going to stay unfinished. So really sharp, fun stuff. There's the characters are really, really well built up, especially the folklore professor, Alexandra Amberson, the protagonist and the plucky hero who cuts a pretty interesting figure, all like 4'11" of her, just a tiny woman who's really a match for the evil djinn and really does capably. Wishmaster has understandably achieved a kind of cult status, and cult status is bandied about a lot these days for a lot of different properties, but I think it's well earned here. We don't tackle movies like this on the podcast, but in terms of feel, like just overall aesthetic and vibe, the closest we got was maybe Cellar Dweller. That one we podcasted several months back, and that has a similarly spirited, pardon the pun, feel, whereas Wishmaster has that one beat for the sheer audacity and gusto of its practical effects and just how ambitious it is storytelling-wise, because it really is fun to have a kind of cursed object and to have all these people whose interests revolve around it. It's pretty amazing. It's really easy to set aside your critical faculties for this one and just go run along gung-ho and just go along for the ride. For that reason, we're going to give it a hearty and wholehearted 3.5 out of 5. It's really, really engaging stuff. Also, the late Vern Troyer of Austin Powers appears as obviously a mini Wishmaster after he first escapes from Gem Prison. There's a Pazuzu, a personification of the demonic figure, again a callback to The Exorcist, so a reference to that one, and the director makes a cameo himself. This was shot on a budget that's pretty limited, and they do really a lot with very little, and it tripled its budget, so good for them, and it subsequently spurred a bunch of sequels, none of which I have to confess I've seen, and it's really, I guess, a beggar's belief that this one would receive so much critical, such a risible response and receive so much opprobrium. I mean, sometimes critics really have to get their heads out of their asses and just take something for what it is and not treat it that it's like it's some sort of world beater full of gravitas that you're going to be contemplating for months to come. I mean, San Francisco Chronicle called it extravaganza of bad special effects and worse acting. I don't know how you could say that these are bad special effects. I mean, they're just absolutely incredible and extremely sublimely gory stuff. There's stuff that calls out, again, Evil Dead. There's alien-esque scenes. There's the director himself being killed by a piano and just a litany of bodies laid waste to. So for a supernatural film that's driven by a creature that, as the movie says, lives between two worlds in a kind of pre-Islamic purgatory, I mean, this one really delivers in a way that many of these similar films don't. So, I mean, you got to give credit where credit is due and give this one its due for sure. I mean, you owe it to yourself to see it, and we probably will check out some of the sequels, because the likes of Final Destination, but also Happy Death Day to You, have been surprising efforts that have lent themselves to actually surprisingly decent sequels. So there are series with good sequels, you just have to look harder to find them. And so we'll see where this one takes us, 90s being the second least favorite decade of ours in the horror pantheon after the early 2000s, but there are still a few nuggets of gold to be unearthed if you look hard enough there too. We shall talk to you soon, and take care. Thank you.